20. Athor thrust out a belligerent lower lip and glared in rage at the man from the Chronicle. He was able to restrain himself only by a supreme effort.
You here, despite everything I said? Of all the audacity!
Theremin's hand was outstretched in greeting as though he really had expected Athor to accept it. But after a moment, he lowered it and stood regarding the observatory director with astonishing insouciance. In a voice trembling with barely controlled emotion, Athor said,
You display an infernal gall, sir, in coming here this evening. It astounds me that you dare to show your face among us.
From a corner of the room, Binet, running the tip of his tongue nervously across his lips, interposed nervously. Now, sir, after all,
did you invite him to be here when you knew I had expressly forbidden?
Sir, It was Dr. Safera, Theremin said. She urged me very vigorously to come. I'm here at her invitation.
Safera? Safera? I doubt that very much. She told me only a few weeks ago that she thinks you're an irresponsible fool. She spoke of you in the harshest possible manner.
Athor looked around.
Where is she, by the way? She was supposed to be here, wasn't she?
No answer came. Turning to Binet, Athor said,
You're the one who brought this newspaper man in, Binet. I'm utterly amazed that you'd do such a thing. This isn't the moment for insubordination. The observatory is closed to journalists this evening, and it's been closed to this particular journalist for a long time now. Show him out at once.
Director Athor, Theremin said, if you'll only let me explain what my reason for...
I don't believe, young man, that anything you could say now would do much to outweigh your insufferable daily columns of these last 2 months. You have led a vast newspaper campaign against the efforts of my colleagues and myself to organize the world against the menace that is about to overwhelm us. You have done your best with your highly personal attacks to make the staff of this observatory objects of ridicule.
He lifted the copy of the Sorrow City Chronicle on the table and shook it at Theremin furiously.
Even a person of your well-known impudence should have hesitated before coming to me with a request that he be allowed to cover today's events for this paper. Of all newspaper men, you!
Athor dashed the newspaper to the floor, strode to the window, and clasped his arms behind his back.
You are to leave immediately,
he snapped over his shoulder.
Binet, get him out of here.
Athor's head was throbbing. It was important, he knew, to get his anger under control. He could not afford to allow anything to distract him from the vast and cataclysmic event that was about to occur. Moodily, he stared out at the Sorrow City skyline and forced himself back toward calmness, as much calmness as he was likely to be able to attain this evening. Onos was beginning now to sink toward the horizon. In a little while, it would fade and vanish into the distant mists. Athor watched it as it descended. He knew he would never see it again as a sane man. The cold white gleam of Setha also was visible low in the sky, far across the city at the other end of the horizon. Setha's twin, Tano, was nowhere to be seen, already set, gliding now through the skies of the opposite hemisphere, which soon would be enjoying the extraordinary phenomenon of a five-sun day. And Setha itself was also swiftly vanishing from view. In another moment, it too would disappear. Behind him, he heard Binet and Theremin whispering.
Is that man still here?
Athor asked ominously. Binet said, Sir, I think you ought to listen to what he has to tell you.
You do? You think I ought to listen to him?
Athor whirled, his eyes gleaming fiercely.
Oh, no, Binet. No, he'll be the one to listen to me.
He beckoned peremptorily to the newspaper man, who had made no motion at all to leave.
Come here, young man. I'll give you your story.
Theremin walked slowly toward him. Athor gestured outward.
Setha is about to set. No, it already has. Onos will be gone also in another moment or two. Of all the six suns, only Dovim will be left in the sky. Do you see it?
The question was scarcely necessary to ask. The red dwarf sun looked even smaller than usual this evening, smaller than it had appeared in decades. But it was almost at zenith, and its ruddy light streamed down awesomely, flooding the landscape with an extraordinary blood-red illumination as the brilliant rays of setting Onos died. Athor's upturned face flushed redly in the Dovim light.
In just under 4 hours, he said, civilization, as we have known it, will come to an end. It will do so because, as you see, Dovim will be the only sun in the sky.
He narrowed his eyes, stared toward the horizon. The last yellow blink of Onos now was gone.
There. Dovim is alone. We have 4 hours now until the finish of everything. Print that. But there'll be no one to read it.
But if it turns out that 4 hours pass and another 4 and nothing happens? Asked Theramon softly.
Don't let that worry you. Plenty will happen, I assure you.
Perhaps, but if it doesn't? Aethor fought against his rising rage.
If you don't leave, sir, and Bine refuses to conduct you out, then I'll call the university guards and... No. On civilization's last evening, I'll allow no discourtesies here. You have 5 minutes, young man, to say what you have come here to say. At the end of that time, I will either agree to allow you to stay and view the eclipse, or you will leave of your own accord. Is that understood?
Theramon hesitated only a moment. Fair enough. Aethor took out his pocket watch.
5 minutes, then.
Good. All right. First thing. What difference would it make if you allowed me to take down an eyewitness account of what's to come? If your prediction comes true, my presence won't matter at all. The world will end, there'll be no newspaper tomorrow. I won't be able to hurt you in any way. On the other hand, what if there isn't any eclipse? You people will be the subject of such ridicule as the world has never known. Don't you think it would be wise to leave that ridicule to friendly hands? Aethor snorted.
Do you mean your hands?
Certainly. Theramon flung himself down casually in the most comfortable chair in the room and crossed his legs. My columns may have been a little rough at times, agreed. But I let you people have the benefit of the doubt whenever possible. Bine is a friend of mine, after all. He's the one who first gave me an inkling of what was going on here. And you may recall that at the beginning I was quite sympathetic to your research. But I ask you, Dr. Aethor, how can you, one of the greatest of all scientists in all of history, turn your back on the awareness that the present century is a time of the triumph of reason over superstition, of fact over fantasy, of knowledge over blind fear? The Apostles of Flame are an absurd anachronism. The Book of Revelations is a muddled mass of foolishness. Everyone intelligent, everyone modern knows that. And so people are annoyed, even angered, to have scientists turn about face and tell us that these cultists are preaching the truth. They...
No such thing, young man, interrupted Aethor. While some of our data has been supplied us by the apostles, our results contain none of the apostles' mysticism. Facts are facts, and there's no denying that the apostles' so-called foolishness does have certain facts behind it. We discovered that to our own chagrin, let me assure you. But we've scorned their mythologizing and done whatever we could to separate their quite genuine warnings of impending disaster from their quite preposterous and untenable program for transforming and reforming society. I assure you that the apostles hate us now even more than you do.
I don't hate you. I'm just trying to tell you that the public is in an ugly humor. They're angry. Aethor twisted his mouth in derision.
Let them be angry.
Yes, but what about tomorrow?
There'll be no tomorrow.
But if there is, say that there is just for the sake of argument. That anger might take shape as something serious. After all, you know, the whole financial world's been in a nosedive in the last few months. The stock market has crashed 3 separate times, or haven't you noticed? Sensible investors don't really believe the world is coming to an end, but they think other investors might start to think so. And so the smart ones sell out before the panic begins, thus touching off the panic themselves. Then they buy back afterward and sell again as soon as the market rallies and begin the whole downward cycle all over again. And what do you think has happened to business? Johnny Public doesn't believe you either, but there's no sense buying new porch furniture just now, is there? Better to hang on to your money just in case, or put it into canned goods and ammunition and let the furniture wait. You see the point, Dr. Aethor. Just as soon as this is all over, the business interests will be after your hide. They'll say that if crackpots in the guise of serious scientists can upset the world's entire economy any time they want simply by making some cockeyed prediction, Then it's up to the world to keep such things from happening. The sparks will fly, Doctor. Atho regarded the columnist indifferently. The 5 minutes were almost up.
And just what were you proposing to do to help the situation?
Well, Theremin said, grinning, what I have in mind is this. Starting tomorrow, I'll serve as your unofficial public relations representative. By which I mean that I can try to quell the anger you're going to face, the same way that I've been trying to ease the tension the nation has been feeling. Through humor, through ridicule if necessary. I know, it would be hard to stand, I admit, because I'd have to make you all out to be a bunch of gibbering idiots. But if I can get people laughing at you, they just might forget to be angry. In return for that, all I ask is the exclusive right to cover the scene at the observatory this evening. Athor was silent. Binet burst out. Sir, it's worth considering. I know that we've examined every possibility, but there's always a million-to-one chance, a billion-to-one chance, that there's an error somewhere in our theory or in our calculations. And if there is... The others in the room were murmuring now, and it sounded to Athor like murmurs of agreement. By the gods, was the whole department turning against him? Athor's expression became that of one who found his mouth full of something bitter and couldn't get rid of it.
Let you remain with us so that you'll be better able to ridicule us tomorrow? You must think I'm far gone in senility, young man.
Theremin said, but I've explained that my being here won't make any difference. If there is an eclipse, if darkness does come, you can expect nothing but the most reverent treatment from me, and all the help I can give in any crisis that might follow. And if nothing unusual happens after all, I'm willing to offer my services in the hope of protecting you, Dr. Athor, against the wrath of the angry citizens who... Please, a new voice said. Let him stay, Dr. Athor. Athor looked around. Sephira had come in unnoticed by him. I'm sorry I'm late. We had a little last-minute problem at the archaeology office that upset things a little, and she and Theremin exchanged glances. To Athor, she said, Please don't be offended. I know how cruelly he's mocked us, but I asked him to come here this evening so that he could find out at first hand that we really were right. He's my guest, Doctor. Athor closed his eyes a moment. Sephira's guest. It was too much. Why not invite Folliman, too? Why not invite Mondior? But he had lost his appetite for further dispute. Time was running short, and obviously none of the others minded having Theremin here during the eclipse. What did it matter? What did anything matter now? Resignedly, Athor said,
All right. Stay if that's what you want. But will you kindly refrain from hampering us in our duties in any fashion? Understood? You'll keep out of the way as much as possible. You will also remember that I am in charge of all activities here, and in spite of your opinions as expressed in your columns, I will expect full cooperation and full respect.